Tips and styling. You're on air.
Hello, everybody. How you doing tonight? My name is Joseph Richard. Thank you for joining SEIU Local 73 on this call today. We're going to be talking today about the SOS bargaining, which led to a tentative agreement, and that will be start the ratification process tomorrow and counting the ballots on Monday, September 18th at 1 p.m. in our Chicago office at 300 South Ashland, fourth floor. Members are welcome to attend the count. Remember, you can press zero at any time to ask a question during this call. Again, I'm Joseph Richard, Director of School, State, Muni, and Fire Division. I'll be moderating this call, and I want to thank everybody for taking time to call or to listen to this ratification conference call. You can find the ratification summary and the schedule on our website at SEIU73.org. I'll repeat that at the end of the call. It has also been faxed to all of the facilities. Howlett and Dirksen will have ratification tomorrow and Thursday. I'm sorry, it'll be tomorrow at Howlett, Thursday at Dirksen. Again, thank you for joining us. This contract negotiation has been long, tedious, and the bargaining team fought long and hard to secure a wage increase and to keep the additional benefits that we had other than other state employees. A complete memorandum, again, can be found on our website. The failure of both the governor and the legislature to reach a budget has greatly impacted the state. In this budget, upon the analysis, we determined that the SOS had about $5 to $7 million available for raises and for all the various unions and for additional hiring. No money was given for previous years without a budget, so it was the one-time allotment of money that was available. SEIU represents about 2,300 members at the Secretary of State. We know that for every 1% of raises we receive, it costs approximately $1.2 million. Your bargaining team secured a 4% raise over the 2 years with the $1,000 signing bonus, which averages out to about 1.1%. So we think that we've got about 5%. We got 5%, which came out to about $5.5 million. The committee fought hard to keep the birthday holiday, improve the working out of pay class, and improve the bereavement and travel pay, along with some other changes that can be found in the summary. We have a lot of work ahead of us. We need to start planning now and building out our power to determine who we want to elect as our next governor in 2018, so that hard-working employees who serve the public every day and provide good customer service aren't under attack and trying to keep the increases of health insurance, reduce pension, and remove bargaining rights and not being given raises for the work that they perform. We all need to stand together to commit to the union by signing membership applications when they come out to do the ratification. We need to make our voices heard through completing our survey and helping building political power through our COPE program. I look forward to working with each of you in 2018 and electing the right politicians for Illinois. So again, you can press at any time to ask a question during this call. We would like to inform everybody that the bargaining team has recommended that we fully ratify and pass this agreement and accept it. They fought long and hard to get the best deal possible and feel at this time no other state employee has received any increase except at the Secretary of State. We feel that this was the best that we could achieve in this battle. So again, dial zero at any time during this call to ask any questions. I want to thank everyone for taking time to call in. Again, the ratification summary can be found on our website at SEIU73.org. The ratification schedule for all facilities can be found on our website also. Again, tomorrow we'll be at Howlett, and on Thursday we'll be at Dirksen. And you can also vote at any location on the ratification schedule. If you're on vacation or if you're not at your facility, just go in, tell them your name, they'll look it up, and you'll be able to vote at any one of the facilities that we're going out to. We have a bunch of different teams that are going out to each of the facilities, so there will be in multiple locations on any given day. So we have the first question we have here is from LaShawn. LaShawn, do you want to talk about the bereavement question that you have?
Yes. Recently I had a great grandparent that passed away about 2 weeks ago, and I was under the impression that I was able to use bereavement time to attend the funeral. I did not take any additional days off or anything, so it was just the day of the funeral. So I come to work 2 weeks later, I was told that the bereavement was denied and they used sick time of mine instead. Now, it just so happens that Saturday I worked a overtime day, and so they did not include my time and a half. And so I went and I spoke to the personnel, and they told me that in order to compensate that, I guess, that they would use PL time and vacation time, but I would still have to use my own personal time for the funeral. So when did this change come about?
Okay, so I'm going to put you on mute, and I'm going to answer the question, okay?
Okay.
So basically, great-grandparents were never covered. Grandparents are covered. Under the new bereavement proposal, there's a Tier 1 and a Tier 2 that doesn't apply to your status as an employee. Tier 1 covers everybody up to uncle, aunt, grandparents, grandkids. So if somebody passes away under the new proposal, you get 3 days off for a Tier 1 covered family member. Tier 2, you get 2 days off to attend the service. And it has to be one of those defined definitions of relatives. So a great-grandparent is not covered. So then they will allow you to use personal sick time or any other benefit time that you have to cover any parent or any relative that's outside the realm of the non-defined relatives in the contract. So for Tier 1, in the old contract, you would only get 3 days to attend the service. We've improved the language. Now it's 3 days to grieve. So if your parent or your spouse or somebody's in another country, they pass away, you don't attend the services, as long as you use the 3 days within 7 days, it's no questions asked. You fill out the form, you put the relationship down, you maybe provide a obituary or some mass card or something to show that you're related to that person and how you're related, and you get the 3 days, no question asked. If it's Tier 2, it's to attend the service. You get 2 days to attend the service, and again, you would follow the same format, and you would get that time off. So unfortunately, great-grandparent is not covered. It never was. And in the past, the improvement made to this language was if somebody passed away, you know, prior to a weekend and the services were held on a Saturday or on a Sunday evening and a burial on a Monday, the Tuesday through Saturday people did not get any bereavement time because it fell on days off and you only got work days off for bereavement. So this is greatly improved. There is some confusion out in the facilities because the other contracts did not have the same kind of language, and the non-union employees have different language, so there's different forms. But make sure you get the right form. You are entitled to 3 days bereavement for the top number one tiered people and 2 days to attend services for the Tier 2 people. So, Michael, you have a contract on the last contract in Top Ends. Michael, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. The question I have is back a few years ago when our last contract, when everything changed from not doing any more evaluations and our top end of our salaries, or some of us, I don't know if it was everybody, but was dropped by $12,000 or whatever a year annual salary. And what it did was, it first of all, the evaluations were something that gave people to strive for, that if you get a good evaluation, you're going to get a little jump, a raise. But the other thing is that all of a sudden there's a top end of the salary's gone, and there really was never no explanation of that or any kind of warning about it. And it just seems odd that everybody's salaries went down for what they could be eventually, in other words. You know, right. And that's the question I really have, is how, is that something was a temporary thing, or is it ever going to come back to that the salaries will be boosted back up, at least the scale would be boosted back up again?
Right. I'm going to put you on mute, Michael, and answer your question. So basically, Michael, in the last contract, we negotiated new salaries. Anybody that was exceeded the salary range was red circled. They didn't lose any money. The secretary, you know, because of the economic situation, felt that the ranges were too high. So when we negotiated that last contract, some of the salary ranges were brought down and the maximums were brought down by some money. In this current contract, the people that are topped out will get a bonus instead of the evaluation. The bonus would be based, you know, on 2% up to a $1,200 cap. And again, it's an economic issue that, you know, again, we've extracted as much money as we felt that we possibly could. And, you know, in the past, there were other economic benefits. There were other raises and things that were taken away in the last contract because of the economics in the state. So right now, the top ends of the salary are staying the same, and the bonuses and the 2% across the board increase it'll be a step increase for the non-professional titles. So the clerical titles will get a step increase, which are all at 2%. The contract is the number, the steps are all 2% apart, prorated. And in the professional unit, you'll get a 2% increase added to your base. Or for both, if you're at the top, it will be a 2% increase up to a $1,200 cap. And it's all pensionable. And again, because of the economic situation, this was the best that we could negotiate under this agreement. And again, as a reminder, nobody else in the state has gotten an increase except for the Secretary of State. So I'm going to go back to Thomas. Thomas, you have a question about the $1,000? Hello, Thomas, are you there?
Every year the cost of living goes up.
I'm sorry, Thomas, can you repeat your question?
Every year the cost of living goes up. And this $1,000 or $1,200 doesn't even offset it. Or if it does, it just offsets it. And then the following year we have nothing, the following year we have nothing. So this is just a wash.
Right. So, again, you know, there hasn't been a budget for 3 years. We know that, you know, we did our analysis of the budget that was given to the Secretary of State, and we found that it was somewhere between $5 and $7 million that was allotted for personnel. And the $1,000 bonus, signing bonus, and the 2% December 1st and next December 1st, extracted about $5.5 million of that money. There are still other unions at the Secretary of State that had to settle their contract, and there were some hiring that they want to do and things like that to absorb the other cost. So we think we were able to extract as much as we possibly could for the SEIU members at Local 73. The bargaining committee felt very strong that we got every penny that we possibly could, and the signing bonus was a way to do that. Again, the legislature didn't allot any money for retro pay or back pay. It was a fixed amount that was given to the Secretary of State. So this was the best that we could possibly do under these economic times, which gets us back to what I said earlier, is that in 2018, we have a governor's election. He's been attacking us. He's been going after labor. You know, he wants to charge more for the health insurance. He wanted to take your pension away. This guy is terrible. He didn't allow for any increases. You know, there was a small amount of money that was given to the Secretary of State in his budget for increases. So I think that, you know, again, the bargaining committee did a very good job in extracting as much money from the Secretary of State as we possibly could to give you the raises and to give the signing bonus that we got in this contract. So I'm going to go to Paul. Paul, you have a question about the exec ones?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I got a letter from the Secretary of State telling me that I'm out of the union. I'm an exec one, but I haven't heard anything from the union yet. Just want to know what the exact status of that was.
Okay, so we've appealed a case to the state Supreme Court. The appellate court made a decision on, they published their decision on August 1st, saying that the exec ones and the DFMs are not to, are not public sector employees and that they don't have a right to be in the union at this point. So we have submitted our brief to the state Supreme Court. They have to accept that to make a decision whether they're going to take the case and move it forward. And that's pretty much where we're at right now. The contract provisions that we've negotiated do not apply to the DFMs or to the exec ones as we're going through this process, and we will continue to keep people posted once we get a notification from the state Supreme Court whether we're going to accept this case or not. So that right now, that's exactly where we're at with that situation. So, Thomas, you have a question about the pay scale?
Yes.
Go ahead, Thomas.
I was curious. I came in with almost 30 years of service, but I still started at the bottom end of the pay scale, and even when I went full-time, you know, it didn't really change much, and I'm wondering if there was going to be any kind of changing in the pay scale for people who came in as Tier 1s.
So what's happened over the past, and I'm not sure I quite understand your question, but the 30 years of service was in other industry. It wasn't at the Secretary of State, correct?
No, it was with the state, but not with the Secretary of State.
Okay, so one of the things we did in past contracts was they were hiring employees off the street. They were hiring employees from other state agencies, and they were just putting them anywhere else, anywhere on the pay scale that they wanted to. So one of the things that we negotiated was that unless there was an extraordinary amount of experience, that the Secretary of State had to start everybody at the first step. And there have been cases where they have put people at step 2, 3, 4, 5, some even higher based on the experience in the field that they've come over to the Secretary of State in. But for the most part, the steps are everybody starts at the same level so that nobody gets any privilege or nobody gets ahead of anybody. Because we did have some employees that were being hired at, you know, like I said, 5, 6, 7, 8 steps and had no experience, nothing else, and they were just hired in because they had connections. So we tried to stop that, and everybody starts at step 1, and they progress through the steps with each subsequent contract and each year of service, and as we negotiate those types of benefits. So I hope that answers your question. Paula, you're questioning about the bonus?
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Paula.
Want to know the exec ones and twos and the DMFs one and twos. We're not in the union anymore for right now.
But
for the past 3 years, we've been paying union dues. Do we still, are we entitled to getting the $1,000?
At this point, no. And the problem was here's the problem. The appellate court made its decision, published its decision prior to us ratifying the contract or finishing negotiating the contract. So at that point, when they published their decision, you were no longer a union member at that point. It ended that relationship on the moment that they published that decision. So this isn't something that we've chosen to do. It's something that we're very unhappy about. We're going to exhaust every remedy. Again, we're appealing it to the state Supreme Court. We think it's a terrible decision. We think it was a wrong decision. We've been fighting this. You know, it's been quite a long time that we've done this. And with the DFMs, I mean, they've been in the bargaining unit since 2008. So we think it was a terrible decision. We're doing everything we possibly can to correct that situation by taking it to the next step. And again, we'll keep people informed on that and make sure that everybody knows where that's going. So, Daniela, you have a question about...
Hi, this is Danielle, and I have a question regarding testing and interviewing and the time that is allowed it. Recently, I was scheduled for an interview. I'm an intermittent, and the interview time was at 1 p.m. My start time was at 12 p.m. I was told that I would have had to use 3 hours of my own PL time for that day. Now, I live in Joliet, and the interview was in Chicago. Midday takes an hour and 47 minutes. And then they wanted me to go from Chicago to Plano, Illinois, which would have been another 2 hours and some odd minutes. But then I was told that I had to, they were only would pay for 2 hours of the day. And I was reading over the ratification, but the wording still is ambiguous. So will there be any corrections, or will there be any clear...
So yeah, the language, I mean, we do have language that talks about that, and we will make sure that it's what it's supposed to be. I think there was some confusion where drivers was only allowing people an hour for travel time. So I highly recommend that you give either Karen or myself a phone call, and we can figure out what the situation was. I don't know if it's too late to file a grievance or not, but that's something that we might be able to address. You can call our Chicago office at 312-787-5868 or the Springfield office at 217-522-1182. Ask for myself, Joe, in Chicago, or Karen in Springfield, and we can see if we can get that figured out, okay? So I'm going to get – Pamela, you have a call about a bereavement?
Yes, I did. Is this with the no questions asked on the bereavement? Is that something new with this new contract? Because I had 4 people pass away last year, and I got nothing but hassles. The last 2 were my aunts, and I didn't even try to take bereavement because they hassled me so much when my father passed away in September. Because we hadn't found my father right away. He lived by himself, and my sister found him. He was in Seattle like a week after he had passed away. And I got nothing but hassle. I had to provide the death certificate and when they found him on it, and it was just it was just traumatic to me.
Yes, it is new language.
Okay.
It has been – it was a resolution to a bunch of grievances that were filed – as I talked about the Tuesday through Saturday people, and people weren't getting their time and all the hassles that were going on.
Oh,
so we
it
did
was
resolve
horrible.
It. Right. And we resolved that issue. There shouldn't be any problems anymore. It was probably, I would say we resolved the grievance about, I want to say 6 months ago that we came up with this, and
mm-hmm.
now it's being put into part of the contract as we ratified, and it should be problem-free and stress-free.
Oh, thank you. Because
I'm sorry
that,
for your loss.
That was so stressful
I'm,
for me at that time.
Right.
And then I had a brother-in-law pass away in November. I took a day off, a day and a half maybe for his, because it was they hassled you so much. And then my 2 aunts passed
right.
away. I didn't even take bereavement time for them because,
right.
and I was close to one of them, you know, because
right.
it was
so
just so stressful.
Right. Again, I'm sorry for your losses, and hopefully in the future, you know, if something does happen, it shouldn't be problematic at all. And if you do run any problems, make sure you get a hold of your steward or the representative for your facility and let them know that you're having problems, and we'll get them straightened out pretty quickly, because personnel and everybody understands the process. There is some confusion, as I said, because some of the other unions that did not have this agreement that we had. So hopefully in the future we won't have the problems that we had in the past. So I'm going to go to Juliet. Juliet, a question about intermittence.
Hi. I've been working to the Secretary of State for a little better than 3 years. And I know, as intermittent, I noticed on the contract for people who've been working there, you're only given $500. But those who've been working better than a year, they're going to be receiving the same amount. And I wanted to know why they're not a differential. I have not had a raise since I've been there.
So, again, for the intermittence, it is $500, and the full-time is $1,000, and you will get the 2% wage increase along with the other employees. So there will be a 2% in December 1st of this year, December 1st of next year. So those are the increases. The intermittents do work a lesser schedule than the full-time employees. We did try to bring the intermittent amount up. And that was the best that we could do for the intermittents. We struggled hard to get that amount. And it was a struggle to get the $1,000 for the full-time people. So this, we felt, again, that this was the best that we could possibly negotiate in these economic times where there hasn't been a budget for 3 years. The legislature, the governor, has not approved money or anything else for these increases. So, again, we think we extracted as much as we possibly could from the Secretary of State. And, you know, again, we worked really hard to get what we got. The committee fought long and hard to get this. It's been a three-year negotiations. And hopefully we'll get through this and get a different governor elected where we're not being attacked all the time from our legislature. Next question is Gail.
Gail.
Hi, Gail.
Hi.
What's your question?
I just wanted to clarify on the $1,000 signing bonus. That's upon signing when we ratify the contract. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct.
So everyone gets that? I mean, other than, like you just clarified, but even the ones who are topped out in their classification?
Yes. So anybody that was that worked prior to 2000, geez, I'm drawing a mental blank here. Anybody that worked prior to 2015 gets and is on the payroll at the time of ratification, get it. So if anybody's retired, left, quit, fired, and they're not on the payroll at the time of ratification, they will not receive that $1,000.
Okay,
but anybody
so
that's
then...
on payroll and anybody that worked in 2015 and 2016 would get that.
Can I still ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't know if I was muted.
I still got you on. I forgot to mute you, so go ahead.
Okay. So we get the $1,000 signing bonus, and then so that goes in as soon as it's ratified and all the paperwork is through. Then on December 1st, then we would be eligible for the, either the 2% or up to $1,200 if you're topped out.
Correct. So so basically, I think we did the math. If you're a PSR, I think they're topped out at 54, 55,000. They would be right at that 1,200. I keep saying 12,000. 1,200 limit. So right around 54,000, you would get anything above that. You would get, you know, it'd be the 1,200 on the step
okay.
in or on the.
I was
okay?
just unclear on the signing bonus. I wasn't sure how that was being done, but just everyone gets it as soon as it's ratified.
Right. We're going to do one more call. And Kathleen, you have a call on bereavement? Hi, Kathleen.
Hello?
Is Kathleen still there? Hi, Kathleen. Do you have a call on bereavement?
Hi. Yes, I do. There's
okay,
a form with the there's a form that you have to fill out with the Secretary of State's office for bereavement. And my brother passed away in July. And you have to put down the day that you take off and the reason. So, like, my brother passed away in July, but his wake and funeral is on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they give examples of why you can take off in the bereavement form, like for funeral
right.
arrangement, funeral
so
only.
So I
only took off one day because his funeral was on Saturday in Wake.
Right.
So I only
so I
took one day, you know.
Right. So I know exactly. They gave you the wrong form. As I said, there was some confusion over that. So now, one clarification. So with the seven, if you take the 3 days within 7 days, you get them automatically. There's no questions asked. If there's a situation where you need an additional day, let's say there's a cremation and you're going to bury the person or do the ceremony, a formal ceremony after that, and it's beyond the 7 days, then you give them, you tell them, look, we're doing a memorial service, you know, 10 days after his passing or 15 days after the passing or a month after the passing, we're
mm-hmm.
going to do the official burial or we're going to do the ceremony, you know, memorial of life, then they will grant that time. But you have to give them that information for that specific thing. If you take the 3 days within the seven, there should be no questions asked. You were given the wrong form. And I think we've gotten that. The Secretary, I know, has sent their managers the correct information. But, again, if you run into a problem, please contact your steward immediately or the union representative for your facility, and we'll get that straightened out immediately. Okay?
So there is a different form. You're not supposed to have to give the reason.
That is correct. The only time they ask for the reason. Right. The only time they ask for the reason if you go beyond the 7 days.
Okay, so then all you have to do is sign it and the 3 days and then show the proof with, like, the obituary
correct.
Or something.
That
I
is
see.
Correct.
Okay.
And now if you're attending the cert for Tier 2, if you attend the cert for Tier 2, you would have to get a note from the undertaker for the grandparents, for the aunt, the uncle, the grandkids. You get a note from the undertaker that you attended the service on that day, and you would submit that to the Secretary of State. And that's pretty common now. A lot of the funeral homes and places are mortuaries are doing that, so it's not unusual for somebody to ask for a letter that you attended the service. So, again, I want to thank everybody for taking time to listen into the call. Hopefully we have, there's one more quick question I am going to take here. Darlene, I think this is an important call, and I'm going to take your call, Darlene. It's about the transparency of the vote. So, Darlene, go ahead and give us your question real quick. Hello, Darlene?
This is Darian, not Darlene.
Oh, I'm sorry, Darian. I'm sorry, I was typed wrong. Hi, Darian.
That's okay. How you doing? Great. Thanks for everybody calling in for number one. And then my question is about transparency. I would like to see us as a union be a little bit more transparent on our counts. Whether we ratify a contract or not, we should have an idea of whether it was a closed vote or wasn't a closed vote, so people can get a true idea of all the members, how they're really feeling. If we just know, well, it passed, that doesn't really give me an idea the next time a contract, well, these are things that we didn't like, and so we want to, you know, dig a little bit deeper and stuff. So I like to see us be a little bit more transparent from our counts and knowing what the facilities came up with as far as counts.
So, very good question. So the sanctity of the vote, we go out to each one of the facilities. Again, over the between now and the 19th, we're going out to facilities, and we collect all the ballots. We bring them to Chicago. We open up each of the envelopes that the ballots are in. We put them on a table. We mix them all together, and then we count the vote. And the reason we do that is in a lot of the downstate facilities and a lot of the smaller facilities, there's two or three or four or five people in those facilities. And if you give out an individual vote for each facility, they're going to know how people voted, and it can cause problems. So this is a completely, we count the votes. People can come again and watch the vote count, but it really does protect the sanctity of the ballot. There's no absentee ballots. People vote. The ballots are mixed in, so in a facility like Aledo where you have three or four or five people, nobody's going to know how they voted in that facility, and there's no, well, you said you weren't going to vote or you're going to vote this way or that. It really does protect the sanctity of the ballot. We do give a percentage of the vote count. And, like I said, people can come and watch the vote count at our Chicago office on a Monday. Most of the facilities are shut down on Mondays, so you're more than welcome to come down to our office and watch the count and see the actual vote count. But we are not going to give specific numbers to facilities, or we're not going to count them in the facilities again to protect the sanctity of the ballot. So with that, we have some other phone calls. I think we can actually get those questions and return phone calls. If not, when the committee's out there, make sure you ask your questions of the committee people that are out there. Every one of the facilities is going to have somebody that was on the bargaining team come out, and they'll be able to answer those questions. Again, I thank you for the phone call. The complete summary of the changes are on our website, along with the ratification schedule. Please be patient. If they don't show up exactly on time, they're doing 2 to 3 facilities a day. So there's a time frame there, and they have phone numbers if they're running late, and we told them they're going to be more than half hour late to call the facility and let people know. So again, you can check the website after the vote, and that's SEIU73.org. Again, on behalf of our bargaining committee, Karen Kleinhans de Silva, our senior representative, who's the number 2 chair on the negotiating team, and myself, the director of the division, Joe Richard, I thank you for your time, and have a good night.